This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Roshan and Noel. 9:15 a.m. Monday, the 13th of July. Before we get into more corporate news, let's take a quick look at how the KLCI is doing now, 15 minutes post-opening.
Still in the green, 0.74% up year-to-date, just under 1% up. If you take a look at Singapore, Singapore is playing is now down 0.2% at this point, 2,646 points. Earlier in the day, they were playing jump rope with the line. Right now, they're seemingly staying in the red here.
All right, and now we're taking a look at this morning at Invest Malaysia, which is the annual landmark event hosted by Bursa Malaysia, bringing together some of the movers and shakers of our corporate world together with key policy decision makers. But in this post-COVID-19 era, even this event has had to pivot to the new normal.
Yes, so you know, this event brings together major institutional investors, and so I think for the first time, I think retail investors are also invited through the live streaming through, I think, Facebook.
Yeah, so the theme was economic recovery, policies and opportunities, and it was broadcasted to over 1,000 virtually connected capital market investors around the world. And for the first time, retail investors, as Noel was saying, were invited through Bursa's Facebook page.
So to give us a bit of a flavour of this event, we have on the line with us Anand Pathmakanthan, Head of Regional Equity Research at Maybank Kim Eng, the collaboration partner of Invest Malaysia. Thanks very much for joining us this morning, Anand. Now, Invest Malaysia has just concluded, and although the event was done virtually, what was the tone of the institutional investors who attended the event? You know, was it cautious or were they optimistic, perhaps, explaining that this V-shaped recovery we have seen since mid-March?
Yes, good morning and thanks for having me. But just to recap, you know, the Invest Malaysia 2020 event held last week was its 16th edition and was co-hosted by Bursa Malaysia and Maybank. We had a keynote address by the finance minister, a fireside chat with the SE chairman, and a GLIC, or government-linked investment company, panel discussion comprising the CEOs of EPF, Co-op, and Khazanah, who collectively managed 1.2 trillion ringgit, moderated by the Bursa chairman, Tan Sri Wahid. So a lot of heavy hitters were speaking to both institutional and retail investors. Back to your question, you know, I would describe the tone as cautiously optimistic. You know, the challenges posed by COVID-19 to economic growth and the country's fiscal situation were acknowledged as significant and urgent. However, it's equally clear that Malaysia has done a relatively good job in containing the pandemic and addressing its many immediate economic and social challenges. And I would say, based on discussions at IM 2020, our institutions appear to be assimilating the lessons of the crisis quite well to better leverage, you know, structural growth opportunities in a new normal. And I would flag three of them. One is relating to FDI. Obviously, supply chain relocation from China will accelerate post the pandemic, and Malaysia should be positioned to capture more of the FDI. And I suspect we will see more structural reforms aimed at this in Budget 2021 in November, as well as the 12th Malaysia Plan in January 2021. Two other areas is digitalization, which the SE is pursuing very aggressively. So you might see more no-frills digital-only brokers appearing in Malaysia over the next 6 to 12 months. And on the GLIC side, very clearly, the CEOs are in a much more activist mood, which is very welcome. And this relates especially to ESG, which is a very new sort of a consideration in your investment processes and which they will, you know, steward their investee companies in going forward.
I appreciate that this is a marquee event of Bursa Malaysia and Maybank is a partner here. What's the percentage of foreign institutional investors compared to the previous Invest Malaysia? Do we see more interest from foreign investors, or Malaysia is still staying on the, you know, outside the radar?
Well, I think in terms of, you know, institutional investments in past events, I think it was mentioned before that there were some retail investors also tuning into this one due to the unique format. In previous years, it was purely institutional investors. I think what you're focusing on is foreign investor interest. And that was relatively muted still. You know, I would say less than 10% of those who sort of called in or zoomed in on the Zoominars were foreign investors. And that's reflected really in the year-to-date foreign investor flows. So up to June, we have seen 16 billion net ringgit foreign selling. Not unique for the region. I mean, the whole region is seeing outflows. But certainly for Malaysia, it's a new benchmark because in 2019, we only saw 11 billion for the full year. So clearly foreign interest in Malaysia is still quite muted.
Now, Anand, there's a lot of talk about this supposed V-shaped recovery. Do you share that view?
No, in a word. I don't think we are in for a V-shaped recovery. And that certainly wasn't the takeaway message from IM 2020. And I believe a U-shaped recovery is more realistic based on the experience of East Asian economies that have reopened earlier. Now, even if we don't have second wave concerns and global recovery setbacks, Malaysia faces many growth headwinds. Some of them are more cyclical in nature in terms of the debt levels, which we were already very high before we entered the pandemic. And now we have issues like income and job losses from the lockdown. But there are three structural areas as well, which I think policymakers have to address. One is the oil and gas industry. That still is an outsized contributor to fiscal revenues at 20% of total. And really, we have very little visibility on how this industry will pan out, except to say that there are many, many pressures on it, from an ESG perspective, from a usage, clean energy perspective as well. The other area is tourism. We tend to not gloss over this because, the equity market doesn't have that many tourism, plays per se. But it is the second biggest foreign exchange generator for the country, and it is facing a very challenging future. So how are we going to address that? And probably a third structural issue is globalization. Malaysia has been a huge beneficiary of globalization over the last 2-3 decades. And that now appears to have peaked and may even reverse. How are you going to deal with that to sustain our sustained economic growth? So yeah, more U-shaped than V-shaped for me.
So Anand, recently also we had Bank Negara Malaysia cutting the OPR rate to the record low of 1.75%, suggesting a weaker second half. So do you share their dovish sentiment? What keeps you awake at night?
Yeah, what keeps me awake at night? My baby daughter does that most of the time right now. Oh, her vocal range is quite amazing. But, on the economy itself, I think, Bank Negara's move, I think they called it, sort of cautionary dovish. Yeah. And I sort of agree what they've done. There's plenty of room to cut rates still. We're not in a position like Thailand where rates are already 0.5% and real rates are negative. In Malaysia, we still have, even if it is cut, it's 175 basis points on the OPR. And real rates, if you look at the May deflationary CPI numbers, real rates are still very high at 3% plus. So we can definitely cut rates. Should we be doing that? Yes, I think so. I think this recovery is still very tentative, and we need to support it as much as possible. So I think, this rate cut is the right way to go. And given our view for the rest of the year, we think they will pause here. But certainly the risks are on the downside, and we could see more rate cuts going forward.
Now, Anand, when we look at the Malaysian market, the glove sector has been the clear winner this year, with Top Glove and Hartalega up 300 and 200% respectively on a year-to-date basis, and both of them on the top of the value chart at this point as well. Both of them trading way above their PEs, I think 40 times at this point. Is there still some upside, or is this the making of a bubble?
Yeah, so the glove sector is a huge success story in the first half of this year. I think some of the companies in that sector are now bigger than the banks. Complete change from what I've been used to for the last 20 years. So our glove sector analyst, Yen Ling, was very early on the bullish call for the glove makers. I think where she differentiated herself is pointing out that this is not just a cyclical demand surge due to COVID-19, but it's also a structural long-term step up in both volumes and margins for the glove players. So it'll remain in place even when the pandemic eases. The volume step up is from a broadening base of glove users. In terms of both industries, F&B and stuff are using much more gloves, and also countries. So a lot of emerging countries, which were skipping on glove usage before, now have no choice but to use more gloves. And then you have the margin expansion angle. There's much higher demand for better quality nitrile gloves because they're safer, and more hardy. And in this area, Malaysian producers dominate global production. So is there still upside? Well, we have a target price, for example, of $21.90 for Top Glove. Current market price is just about there. So while I don't think this is a bubble for the fundamental reasons I mentioned before, I think the share price for the glove guys look a bit toppish right now based on our own numbers. So I'll probably leave it there.
So, moving to this question, what sectors and some stock names do you have an overweight call on?
Yeah, so, we have, we cover 6 countries in ASEAN. Just focusing on Malaysia, we are defensive generally. This rally has been quite rapid despite continuous downgrades in earnings, and the market does look a bit stretched. So we would focus on a couple of areas. Being defensive means being in high yield sectors. So we like the boring stuff like utilities, REITs, consumer staples. And I think as rates come off, even across the region, you will see yield plays continue to be very high demand. For growth, we would look to tech, which has done very well in Malaysia as well. Logistics. including industrial REITs like Axis and the healthcare glove sector. For value, look at the stronger banks. Yeah, we're all waiting for the loan moratorium to expire in September to see what the asset quality picture is. But from our view viewpoint, you know, banks are in a very strong position and they should be able to weather the storm. So some good bargains there. And finally, underweight calls. These are mostly in consumer discretionary, retailers, aviation, obviously, and hospitality tourism.
And so looking at things from a regional perspective as well, Anand, which countries do you see the most upside in by year end? And what's the basis of your thoughts here?
Yeah, so I mentioned, you know, we have research teams in six ASEAN countries. And the only country we see achieving positive GDP growth this year is Vietnam. And that's like 3%, you know, half of what it usually does on an annual basis. To give you a flavor of which countries could recover faster, we just completed a labor market study of these countries. And if you look at issues such as vulnerable industries, you know, tourism, obviously, number one there, border closures, affecting stuff like remittances from foreign workers, that would impact countries like Indonesia and the Philippines in particular. Also, labor mobility within the economy and fiscal support capacity from the government. You put all that together, and our conclusion is the countries that should recover fastest are actually Singapore, Malaysia, and Vietnam. The laggards will be Thailand, Philippines, and Indonesia, who are much more vulnerable to the issues I just mentioned. And this seems to be reflected in their year-to-date, you know, equity market performance. You know, these countries are still year-to-date down 15 to 20% on their benchmark in indexes compared to, say, Malaysia, which is only down like 2% now. So that's how I'll be looking at the recovery. I would focus more on seeing Malaysia, Vietnam as the early recoverers, and then look at Thai, Phils, Indo probably into next year.
Thank you very much for speaking with us this morning, Anand. That was Anand Pathmakanthan, Head of Regional Equity Research at Maybank Kim Eng. I was very interested in what he had to say about the glove sector, that the fact that, because it echoes a little bit what the conversations we've had with Magma as well. So we spoke a little while ago with Dennis Low of the Malaysian Rubber Gloves Makers Association, who was saying that, you know, they are seeing an uptick in demand for gloves from other sectors, not just healthcare, indicating that the demand for rubber gloves could extend past when a vaccine may come into play.
Yeah, it was definitely something I was paying attention to at that point, because there's a lot of, I think, debate over whether we see a bubble or not. But the point here is that demand has now grown beyond healthcare sector. We're seeing everyone wanting to use it. I think it's just that we've seen, if you look at like Top Glove today, is 23 ringgit 86 cent. I think Anand talked about his target price being around 21. So there is quite a bit of attractiveness to the glove stocks at this point.
Right now, we're heading into the 9:30 news bulletin. And then after that, we're going to be having Pressing Matters, where Shazana Mokhtar speaks with Kristen Han, a freelance Singaporean journalist, on the outcome of the Singapore elections. So be sure to stay tuned for that after the news, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.